Morning, birds.
Hey. How you doing? We've got kind of a cool show today, birds. We're doing a kind of a throwback show. Talking about cannabis. We got some memories of some things that happened a while ago, and yeah, just kind of a retro thing here. And I'll tell you what, the interesting thing is that I woke up, I don't know, my hair had grown back. Let's all try it.
Sing song.
All right, everybody now.
Sing a song.
Should I write these down?
Sing.
Oh, my goodness. Good morning from Chicago. It's the Bleat Network. This is Pandemic Pirate Radio, and we're going to have some fun today. We are. It's Tuesday. This is the 8th of December. I thought I'd start with a hippie anthem there. That is the actually remastered. You folks that are listening that are radio and audio and music geeks, that's from the musical Hair. And a band called Oliver. So, good morning, Starshine. Well, we've got all kinds of stuff today. We are going to talk about cannabis, the cannabis industry. We have somebody who runs a dispensary coming on, who's been trying to do the right thing. We'll see what we can do about that. and a number of surprises here as we zip through the day here. Good news. Well, good news for the Brits. I'm not sure it bodes that well for Americans. Britain's National Health Service delivered its first shots of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine earlier this morning, opening a mass vaccination campaign with little precedent in modern medicine, says the New York Times, making the Britons the first people in the world to receive a clinically authorized, fully tested vaccine. This happened, let's see, shortly after midnight here. Margaret Keenan, who's 90, a former jewelry shop assistant, rolled up the sleeve of her Merry Christmas t-shirt to receive the first shot. And her image quickly became an emblem of the remarkable race to produce a vaccine and the global effort to end the pandemic. Said Miss Keenan, I feel so privileged to be the first person vaccinated. No, she didn't cough. She lives in Coventry in central England. And there you go. She says, and I won't do her thing. She says, it means I can finally look forward to spending time with my family. All right, well, that's all good. Except British regulators leapt ahead of their American counterparts to authorize a coronavirus vaccine and upset the White House. Remember them? Set off a spirited debate. President Trump planned today to issue an executive order proclaiming that other nations will not get supplies, U.S. supplies of its vaccine, till Americans have been inoculated. A directive that appears to have no real teeth, it says here. It's interesting that the subtext of this, Pfizer may not be able to supply the United States with additional quantities of its coronavirus vaccine until June or July of next year. Why is that? Well, the Trump administration purchased 100 million doses, but they turned down an offer last summer to buy more. It's just a hoax. Anyway, the UK became the first country in the world to administer that vaccine outside of clinical trials. As we just told you, she was 90 years old. So that's going on. A couple of things. This is not unimportant here. A couple of questions here. Should I be concerned about the safety of the vaccine in Britain? This is the New York Times. Britain's drug regulator is seen as a bellwether agency, and its decision often have influence abroad. So in the case of the Pfizer vaccine, the agency said that it did not cut any corners and undertook the same laborious process of vetting the quality, efficacy, and manufacturing protocols of the vaccine. Let's get them saying laborious. Dr. Anthony Fauci, our guy, said last week that the Brits had not reviewed the vaccine as carefully as the United States. He kind of walked back that. So he says, I've got a great deal of confidence. Who in Britain is going to get the vaccine first? Doctors and nurses, people 80 or over, and nursing home workers. This is a good one here. When can I return to normal life after being vaccinated? Life will return to normal only when society as a whole gains enough protection against the coronavirus. So, in other words, once enough people get vaccinated, it's going to become very difficult for the virus to find a vulnerable people to infect. That is probably going to be about a year, the fall of 2021. One more. If I've been vaccinated, do I still need to wear a mask? Yes, but not forever. The two vaccines that will potentially get authorized this month protect people from getting sick with COVID. But clinical trials that deliver these results were not designed to determine whether vaccinated people could still spread the virus. And the other questions, will it hurt? It's a shot in the arm. What are the side effects? I think the answer there is we're still trying to figure out that. Oh my goodness. Does the vaccine affect fertility? I sure hope so. We'll be right back. Lord. This is a remastered recording of the Iron Butterfly. Come on. Let's put it down for just a second. Let me finish this if I could. So the... Oh, Inagata DeVita, that was a hippie anthem. You know, this is really inside baseball. I downloaded some stuff this morning, and some of these are re-recorded, remastered. They're not exactly the way they used to sound. That's okay. Because time moves on. I guess that's part of what we're going to talk about today. At 13 after the hour on Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago. We are, in fact, going to chat in just a couple of minutes here with Portia Mittens. Portia is the proprietor of a place called the Coffee Pot, C-O-U-G-H-Y, Pot, P-O-T. That is a dispensary. She knows something about the business of cannabis, and we're going to get into that today. So that's coming up. A couple of things that jumped out of the news today. Let's do something here. You know, I have such a good time talking to Aaron, the News Baron, and the Space Baron. This is a moment. I just saw this crossing the headline. I with all due respect, somebody said that journalism is telling people, saying to somebody, he's dead when you didn't know he was alive. This fella, I did not know that he was alive. He just passed. Chuck Yeager, Y-E-A-G-E-R, Chuck Yeager. Passed away. He is dead at 97. Chuck Yeager is the guy that is he's the person. I don't know if you the right stuff. You seen that movie about the space program, written by Tom Wolfe. Anyway, he's the guy that didn't go to space. He wasn't part of the Mercury 7 astronauts. He was the test pilot. He's played by Sam Shepard in that movie. He broke the sound barrier. Chuck Yeager. Yeah. You want to see that? You want to see that movie? You should. I tell you what. Let's take a second here. Let's see Chuck Yeager, played by Sam Shepard. You know, these astronauts were test pilots, and they got into these aircraft, and God only knew what they were going to do. Chuck liked to get a stick of gum.
You hit Mach 2, she's gonna be mighty unforgiving on you. So just take it easy. Ring her out a little bit this time.
You got any gum or don't you?
Yeah, I got me a stick.
Loan me some, will you? I'll pay you back later.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Standing
I guess I was going to space with Chuck Yeager there. That, there's a line in that song, the Eagles' Peaceful, Easy Feeling, I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight. That movie that I was referring to, The Right Stuff, largely takes place in the desert because that's where they were doing all the testing. Anyway, check that out. Check that out. The Right Stuff, if you haven't seen that. Got me thinking about all kinds of movies. Hey, here's a movie. You ever seen really one of my favorites. This is Spinal Tap. You know, this is Spinal Tap. All right. It's a great movie. And there's a scene where they're getting into the limo, the band. And one of the guys is reading a book called Yes, I Can, which is Sammy Davis Jr.'s autobiography. You remember that campaign we had, Yes, We Can? Yeah, all right. Well, this book was called Yes, I Can. And I read that book by Sammy Davis Jr. And in fact, he has a birthday today. Should we take a second? Let's take a second here. Because I'll tell you what, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. is one of those people that, and that's kind of a generational thing there. People that are super, super old, like me, remember Sammy's work kind of at the end of his life there. And I'm not sure that younger people will have it. Anyway, Sammy Davis Jr. is born on this day, December 8th, 1925. He was an American singer, dancer, actor, vaudevillian, and a comedian who's been called the greatest entertainer ever to grace a stage in these United States. I tell you what, he was one of the Rat Pack. For my money, he was the most talented of any of those guys. He could do it all. He could sing and dance and all kinds of stuff. He was married to Mae Britt, who was a blonde Scandinavian woman. So you want to get people nervous if you're a black man in America? You marry somebody like that. And he did. That was controversial. He was nominated for a Tony Award for his performance. And I could go on and on and on. He made a film, not very good one, with the Rat Pack called Ocean's 11 and his own TV variety show. And wow, this is good. Okay. I could do five shows on Sammy. Sammy, of course, lost his eye in an accident. And that was the thing that maybe some people knew about him, and that he had converted to Judaism. So two things there. He had a complex relationship with the black community, it says here. He drew criticism after publicly supporting President Nixon in 1972. I remember that. People said, what are you doing with Tricky Dick? And he said, you know, trying to get something for my people. He was on the golf course one day with Jack Benny. And Jack Benny said to Sammy, what was your handicap on the golf course? Let's read this. He says, talk about handicap. I'm a one-eyed Negro who's Jewish. Sammy Davis Jr.
Come to the right man because I'm the candy man.
Ooh. Who can take a sunrise? Sprinkle it with you. Cover it with chocolate and a miracle or two. The candy man.
Collect the ball.
'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Sammy Davis Jr. on his birthday. You know, it is ironic. I don't know what to make of this, but of a body of work that started way back when and went through all these different decades and different things that he did. The one thing that, if anybody in America has ever heard of Sammy Davis Jr. or can put their finger on one thing, it's that song, The Candyman. That was a big hit toward the end of his run there. Sammy Davis Jr., good birthday to him here. So, at 26 after the hour, this is Pirate Radio from Chicago on a Tuesday morning. It's Gary Lee Wright. We'd love to hear from you. It's radioanything@gmail.com. And if you're listening to me anytime, day or night, you can leave us a voicemail 24/7. It's 844-220-3300. So some other good news, I think, today. The president-elect, my guy, President Joe, is expected to nominate General Lloyd J. Austin III. He would be the first black man to head the American military. He's a former commander of the American military in Iraq. Biden expected to nominate him to be next Secretary of Defense, according to two people with knowledge. If confirmed by the Senate, General Austin would make history as the first African-American to lead the country's 1.3 million active duty troops. And I saw a picture. This guy looks like he could throw a tank through a window. He is a big man. General Austin, 67. He is the only African-American to have headed the U.S. Central Command. And on and on and on. We wish him well. Wish him well. So there we go. General Lloyd J. Austin III, expected to be the Secretary of Defense. In other news, we won the election again. I hope my friend Aaron the News Baron is listening. We're going to hopefully have him on tomorrow. Aaron, are you listening? We won it again. Georgia certified Biden's victory in the state. That's the third time. So we are racking it up, man. We've won Georgia three times now. I'll also be asking Aaron, I'm sure he leapt up this morning. Mount Everest is taller than it was yesterday. I know. You were sleeping, and God only knows how that happened. Mount Everest has a new height at 29,031 feet above sea level. It's now 2 feet higher than it was previously. Come on now. How does this happen? I don't know. All right, we're going to get into that. I have a stack of stuff relating to Aaron. There's a recipe for sourdough starter and a list of questions about measuring mountains. All right. Tell you what, let me zip back, if I may, for just a moment or two. Let's see here. You know what? Let's do this right now. You want to? All right. We're going to talk about cannabis. I'm going to play something that was current the first time I put one of those little things in my mouth. You know what I mean?
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming and the archers split the tree. was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said, I was hoping it was a
After the Gold Rush. You know, I play that because I was thinking about a time many, many years ago. It was way back, just about 1970. In those days, cannabis, wow. The amount of pot that I probably have somewhere in the building here, because I have an Illinois medical card, would have gotten me a life sentence in Texas, because it was enough to be considered a quantity large enough for sale. And I could go on and on and on. And that was an area, you know, the generation split on how to get high. You're a pot smoker? No. I'm a drinker, and that's the way it went. So, and somewhere in the middle of that, we started to talk about medical marijuana, the idea that there might be something in this besides just escaping reality. So, that's what I want to talk about. In fact, I have somebody who knows quite a bit about that. We're going to pick up the phone here. My new friend, Portia Mittens, joins us. We're going to be friends, right, Portia? I have that feeling, you think?
And I think so.
She joins us this morning. Portia, thank you so much. What a beautiful name there. Let me just now, Portia's in Illinois right now, but we're going to talk about some things that you've done, and you had a dispensary in Oregon, I believe, correct? So
I still have a dispensary in Oregon.
All right, let's talk about that. That's called, and that's got a great name. It's called the Coffee Pot, C-O-U-G-H-Y Pot, P-O-T, Coffee Pot. So what's going on with that? I was in Oregon, and I didn't get a chance to go into dispensaries, but tell me about that.
First, it's coffee with an I-E.
Yeah.
C-O-U-G-H-I-E.
Okay.
Just in case anyone wants to look it up.
All right. Let me spell that again. C-O-U-G-H-I-E-P-O-T. Okay,
correct.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right.
But we're in eastern Oregon, closer to the Idaho side.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not by Portland and all the movers and shakers. We're sort of in the middle of the woods. Bigfoot.
I like that.
So they say.
They
told me they've seen Bigfoot. I personally have not seen it.
But you know, you never know. It could happen.
It could.
Yeah. So Oregon, now, Portia, are you originally a Midwesterner?
Yes, Illinoisan, born and raised.
All right. So you went to Oregon to do the dispensary thing, or what was the story there?
Yes, that is the reason I went to Oregon, to open a dispensary.
Right. And how, go ahead.
I was going to say, long story short, it was actually someone that lived next door to my father, me and Aaron's father, growing up, that lives in Oregon, and that convinced me to come out there.
All right. And this was when now again?
This was 2017.
Okay. I think there's so many people that say, "Wow, that sounds like a great idea. Ooh, I'm gonna open a medical pot dispensary." What were the surprises for you?
The surprises for me, one is that the area that my dispensary is in, there were absolutely no black people.
Hmm.
I was the only one. So that was interesting.
I don't have a take on the racial makeup. Is that tend to be true of Oregon or just where you were?
Well, Oregon, mostly where I was. Oregon has a very small minority population, I think around maybe 12%.
Okay.
Collectively of all minorities.
Okay.
But where I was, even eastern Oregon, it's a much, much, much smaller percentage of minorities.
I think that's one of the things I want to talk about. I know here in Illinois there has been a Portia, I don't have any personal knowledge about this, but I get the impression that it's really hard for minorities to get into the cannabis business in Illinois. I don't know why that is, and I don't know why that would be. Do you have a comment about that?
Yes, I do. And my answer is I don't know why it would be either, because we're more than qualified. The way Illinois had the medical program set up to become a dispensary owner, you had to have like 250,000 liquid cash that you could prove, which people did have, and they just had all of these requirements that, to my understanding, many groups were able to meet. And they still were not giving licenses.
Mm-hmm.
That was when it was medical. And then when it turned rec, January of this year, and then they gave out the application, and people applied, myself being one of them. Over 400 people applied with a total of over 600 applications, because you could turn in more than one.
Right.
And they only chose 21 groups to get a license.
Huh.
Of those 21 groups, the actual genetic makeup of like a true social equity African-American or a person of color, I mean, they're all technically social equity by definition,
huh,
but the genetic makeup with people of color was like maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5?
Yeah, no, I saw that. Well,
so it was, so I don't understand how you can't tell me that the state of Illinois only has 21 groups of people that are competent and qualified enough to run a dispensary, especially when I run one.
This is Portia Mittens. Portia, I'm glad you came on. You know what? I don't even know where to start about this. I do have a medical marijuana card in Illinois. I have been going to the dispensary for a while here. Things have changed quite a bit over the years. It's interesting, though. Let me throw something at you. It's just the one that I go to in Chicago here. Just recently started accepting plastic debit cards, and until then it was all cash. Now I don't know how I'm older than everyone, Porsche. I'm certainly older than you, but in the old days, when you looked at an enterprise and tried to figure out whether it was above board, you know, legal, illegal, the first thing you said was, well, what's the economic deal there? And if it was all cash, you knew that it was a criminal enterprise, right? You did. You knew. So that's the first thing that I wanted to know about was how did that happen? And you want to comment about that? And the other thing we could talk about, the House of Representatives did pass a law last week to decriminalize pot on a federal level, but good luck in the Senate. So,
All right.
That's nine questions. Pick any one of them.
Okay. So going with the all cash, since cannabis is not federally legal and banks are backed by the FDIC, they won't touch your money.
All right.
So therefore, the credit card processing typically has to be, there's a bank involved in some way.
And again, so that'd be one specific change were we to decriminalize it federally. This banks would be able to go. Okay, all right. Would that be better for you as a dispensary proprietor?
Yes. Having large amounts of cash on hand and or people thinking that you have it on hand does sort of could raise the criminal element.
Absolutely.
And also it just makes it harder. I mean, it even makes it harder to pay your light bill.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, these days you rarely walk into the light bill, the place, the Commonwealth Edison, and pay cash.
Right,
you know,
right.
You're paying online or you're paying by, you know, your debit card online, or you're sending in a check. Paying cash for your gas bill is just almost unheard of.
I know, but listen, Portia, probably not my parents, maybe my grandparents. That was an era when people, their savings account was in their socks, right? In their sock drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had,
well,
everybody
in
was cash.
In the cannabis industry is about the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm saying, what's wrong with that picture, right? And yeah, sure. I mean, anytime, you know, anytime you went, I mean, I could go in right now. That's the whole thing with money laundering is that I don't know what the amount of money is, but you can only walk in with so much money into a bank, you know, before they say, where'd you get that? Right. So I think what I'm getting from you, you're saying we're trying to do this right. We're trying to do this legal. We're trying to be legitimate, but we're being prevented from doing that.
For example, you know, my dispensary's out in Oregon, so I was in Oregon, living in Oregon, and I had opened a bank account at a U.S. bank. And because the town is so small, and because I am one of the few, so in the town I was in, of Sumter, I was the only African-American person. In the town of Baker, which is like the closest big town,
because
my town had 200 people.
Yeah.
So Baker was a little bigger. They had about 4,000. But even there was maybe 10, 15 African-Americans, me being one of them. So, of course, everyone knew who I was.
Yeah.
Everyone knew I was the girl from Chicago who sold the weed. I mean, that's just what it was.
That's the name I knew. That's my new movie. I just wrote that one. That's what it's called.
The Girl from Chicago was up to
me. Yeah, we're looking for
so
somebody to...
So, U.S. Bank, you know, I had a bank account there, and they actually just closed my account one day.
No.
Just closed it. Just and told me, sent me a check back, and was like, no, thank you. We don't want your money.
Based on what? How'd they
said they thought it was fraudulent activity.
Oh, come on. Oh, jeez.
Yes. And here's an even better story. So we have to pay taxes, state taxes. Now, it's illegal, but we have to pay taxes.
Right.
So we have to get these money orders and pay taxes. Or you can go in and you can pay cash. You can drive all the way to Salem and pay cash. We opted to do money orders. Well, we overpaid one quarter. So the state of Oregon, Department of Revenue, sent us a check back for the overage written on U.S. Bank, which is their bank. I go to the bank to cash it, not deposit it, but to cash it. And they say, we can't cash this because this is to a cannabis dispensary.
Oh, jeez.
So I never got to cash the check to this day. What I had to do was essentially kind of sort of write it back over to the state, and they applied it to my tax account. I never to this day got to cash it, ever.
Portia, you've identified as an African-American woman. I think most people know I'm generally a Caucasian talk show host. How much of this is racism for you? If you were not black, would it be going differently, or what about it?
I don't think for the bank it would be.
Yeah.
No, I think the bank is more concerned about their green because they're being backed by the FDIC. I do think, though, the inability or the lack of African Americans in the cannabis space in Illinois may be have some racism to it. There may be a racist tone. And even across the United States, I think there is a racist tone.
Yeah.
Even with the MORE Act that was just passed. Because in the last hour, the past 20, the like right before it was supposed to be passed, they added that anyone who has a previous felony conviction from cannabis would not be able to get a federal license. Well, because of the war on drugs, that was targeted at black people of color and black people.
Sure.
So again, the majority of the people that will be locked out by what they wrote into this MORE Act would again be black people.
It's
clearly racist. If you targeted a group of people and tried to put more of them in jail than someone else, and then you write an act and you say those same people that we targeted years ago can't get a license, to me, that's racism.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, it's very odd and ironic, Portia. In Illinois, you probably know this, and I said I have a medical marijuana card, and I'll be happy to discuss that with anybody. There's a reason that their pot is medically prescribed. Everything from seizures in these kids that have all kinds of things. There's a lot of reasons for it. Anyway, in Illinois, and somebody asked me recently, he said, you know, do you have a gun? I said, well, I don't have one. I'm not a gun owner. Well, I found out you can't get a license to carry a gun if you have a medical marijuana card in Illinois. They've decided, I know, somebody just said, what? No, you knew, Parsha, you knew that. You knew that. But they've decided that, I don't even know what to make of that. So,
I don't know the logic behind that because it's not logical.
No, it is not.
I mean,
I
honestly don't know what to make of that. It's always baffling.
Do you think, I mean, are you confident now that with the Biden administration and just the end of the Trumpsies, that the overlay of, you know, a little more sanity on the federal level, does that make you optimistic about all this?
You know, honestly, I'm not a Trumpist by any name, but Trump wasn't a big hurdle in the cannabis space.
Yeah.
I don't think he would be any better or any worse than Biden would be, only with regard to cannabis. Let me be very clear about that.
Right, right. No, I got it. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more of a money thing than it is a Republican or Democratic thing, and everyone loves money.
Is somebody making a lot of money in the cannabis industry? Because the people that I'm talking to, you don't seem like you can't even get your checks cashed, right? So it's like, who's somebody's pulling in the dough, are they?
The states.
Yeah.
The states are getting a ton of money. For instance, the state of Oregon has made over $1.1 billion, and they're getting 20% of those tax dollars. Now, the state of Oregon has one-third the population of the state of Illinois, and they've made over $1.1 billion in cannabis, and they're doing neat. So that's over $200 million in tax dollars that one state is getting.
This is, if you just joined us, this is Portia Mittens. Portia is the proprietor of a place called the Coffee Pot, C-O-U-G-H-Y, yes?
I-E.
I-E. Damn it, you told me that before. Somebody listened, you know, they said if the guy didn't smoke pot all day, he'd be able to spell. C-O-U-G-H-I-E,
so
pot. You know what, I remember, this was some years ago, but I think you can sing along to this. This was before pot was legal in California, and I was reading, and there were two lists of statistics, and one of them was the amount of money that the state spent on interdiction and arrests and just everything, you know. And then there was a list of what they would be making if they simply legalized it and taxed it. And I looked at that after I read this article. I said it's not going to be long. And a couple of years after that, in fact, California did legalize it. So what do you know about California's situation, and how would you compare it to Oregon or Illinois?
I am not well-versed on California, although I do know that they're making more money than they were on taxes. I don't know about their financial situation, but I do know about their social equity situation, which is poor as well.
Is it?
Yes, especially in the Bay Area. I mean, it's all over, and I don't know. I mean, I hate to be the person to always pull the race card. You know, this is racist. But this is what it seems like. I mean, there's no way that all of these states are facing the same problem with not giving out licenses to people of color when clearly we're there.
Yeah.
And clearly people of color have done well in the cannabis space for a long time.
I don't get it. I mean, to get for people who don't know, you can get a user's license, as it were, out in California. I was on vacation out there. And I went into a dispensary and they said, call this guy. And I had a conversation with the doctor, the whole thing. I'm sorry, it was ridiculous. And then Portia, I got to remind you, I'm an old hippie. We didn't think anything should be illegal. I'm still not sure that's true. I think adults have that's my own feeling. Nobody has to agree or disagree. I think adults have the right
Oregon,
to.
Oregon, they just decriminalized all narcotics.
Everything, right? Heroin? I mean, that's
everything.
Yeah,
heroin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, I guess it seems to me that we had an opportunity to do something right here, assuming that we know that, I have no idea how many people actually smoke weed in the United States, but it's substantial. We know it is. We know it is. So why keep it underground? Why not bring it up and talk about it and be fair about it? One thing about marijuana cultivation, I don't know. Portia, do you remember what paraquat was? Does that ring a bell at all? Paraquat was another brainstorm of the government. Paraquat was this poison that they sprayed on pot plants. And the idea was an herbicide, right? But the idea was, you know, if you wound up smoking that pot plant after they'd sprayed this poison on it, that wasn't so good for you. So one of the things I think we get now is when you buy, medically grown pot, you know what you're getting. And they've analyzed it and all these things. People that know about medical pot, it's not just one thing. You know, there are all sorts of things. So anyway, having said all that, it just seems to me like, I mean, you're a professional, Portia, are you not? You're a professional.
I would say so, yes.
So what's the problem?
well, you know, I'll take it even a step further in that recreational cannabis is also tested.
Yeah.
It's all tested, so it's all safe. The problem is the government hasn't figured out how to get their cut yet.
Yeah, I know.
That's the real problem, because cannabis in and of itself is not a problem. Even if you look at hemp. Remember hemp?
Yeah.
Paper, I mean, the Declaration of Independence is written on hemp.
That's right.
Rope, you know, I mean, hemp is almost indestructible.
Yeah.
It's easily renewable, sustainable. You can do so many things. You can make clothes out of hemp, plastic. You can get fuel, biodegradable. It's safe for the environment.
Yeah, it's just, It's just weird. I don't know what the word is to demonize. They've demonized this plant.
It was demonized by the paper industry.
Yeah.
And then it just caught on. And but now I think everyone's so broke.
Yeah, I know.
Like Chris Rock said, you know, the government's so broke that they're going to start selling drugs too. So I think that's our only saving grace is that we're broke.
You're right, though.
They're like, what can we do? Well, we can't strip.
I know.
So just selling drugs it is.
You're right, though, about the government. You know, there's a fellow that I used to read all the time, Mike Royko. People my age may remember him. He was a columnist in Chicago. The actual motto of Chicago is herbs in a garden. But Royko actually said that it should be, where's my cut? And that's the, right. So when you said that, I mean, that's it. That's what they're.
They don't
give a damn whether it makes you feel better or not or whatever they want. Where's my cut? So yeah, I think you're right about that. Portia, let's do something. Can you come on again? This is not the first and last time we're ever going to be dealing with this in the country. I'd like to know about how things are going and. Everything that Portia told me today, I'm as far as I'm aware, it's all true. So,
it is all true.
And I know what you're talking about, particularly in Illinois. I don't understand this deal here. So, and the thing is, again, in Illinois, you have to grow the pot in Illinois when it's sold in Illinois, which is a great idea.
That's every state. Yeah,
is it every state?
It's totally illegal. You cannot cross state lines.
All right.
Any state that you're in, that cannabis was grown in that state.
Yeah. This should be for everybody. I hate to sound like a hippie now, but if the idea that this substance was for everybody, then we're gonna have an industry. Let's have an industry for everybody. So,
they're working on it.
Yeah.
There are people. There are a lot of people pushing for it. And it's just a matter. I think the biggest concern with interstate cannabis is probably the black market getting intertwined in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then being able to find a way to move their product along with the legal product.
I think that's
a concern.
I agree with
that. I personally, you know, like to mind my own business, but I can see that being a concern for the government only because they won't be getting their cut of that black market.
Portia, a treat to do this show. I get to meet people like you. Thanks for coming on.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me, and I would love to come back anytime.
Please, Coughee Pot, COUGHIE Pot. You can look it up online.
Yeah.
Portia Mittens. Portia, you be well, and wow, should I note that this widecast was produced in Chicago by Natasha Rodriguez. Hey, have the best day you can. We'll see you tomorrow.
I see trees of green. Red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I think to myself,